This is Vermin Supreme. You are listening to Verbal Shenanigans. Together, we will ride our ponies into a zombie-powered future!
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, your shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
All right, hello, 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 hello. This is Scott here, and Mike, welcome back to another installment of Verbal Shenanigans. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I don't have much to talk about, so if you can say hello like 15 times, I'd be really appreciated.
All right, I got it. Hello, 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 hello.
Try a couple other languages, you know, like hola.
Bonjour.
No, we don't. There we go.
Mahalo. Is that? No. I don't know if that's. Hello.
I'm not sure. Hawaiian?
This is also like asking the two worst people to ever give you any education on foreign languages.
Yeah.
Like we talked about last week, like your foreign languages are all just Russian somehow. And me, all I know is a little bit of Spanish from like high school. That's about it. But
we'll eventually get to Germany. You keep listening. I know you don't understand.
Berlin,
probably laughing because of our accents. But
do you know what? I don't know if it's just from the tweets that we get or the network we're in. Do you know, other than the United States, what the biggest country that listens to us is? Apparently,
biggest country France.
Correct. Okay. For some reason. The French love us, man. I mean, it's a love country, and we're very, you know, we're very loving people. So I think that's why.
Yeah. I mean, they're very snotty to Americans. If you listen to our interviews, we're pretty snotty with our guests. So
yep.
It all balances out.
So anyway, Berlo, well, before we get into that, guys, we are Verbal Shenanigans. That is Mike down there in the sweet state of Georgia, and I'm here, Scott. Scott in New Jersey here. And we are a show that I guess you can describe us as we always have an interesting guest every week. That is, we've been doing that for 2 years straight, at least 3 years straight. And we also try to do some comedic banter, talk about life lessons and stories we learned over each week. We're about 235 episodes in, Mike, but coming off of what I would say. I don't like to put any at number one because everyone has like a little, you know, there's different things I love about everyone. They're like your children. Well, not every podcast, but a bunch of the podcasts. But coming off an interview that I know you felt, that I felt, that even talking to people, like telling them who we had on, they were like, whoa, like that's, you know, that's pretty cool. But we had John Walsh and his son Callahan. John Walsh from America's Most Wanted, the show that ran for however many seasons. And you know, it turned out to be one of our best interviews last week. So it's very, like, I would say on this show to you that, like, we, you know, we go through these things. Like, having a guest-driven show, especially doing it independently with no help, it's me and Mike, and we just, you know, we work our butts off. We send emails, we tweet, we Instagram, we've done through Facebook, we've networked through people we've performed with or whatever. There's no one way to get guests, and I think that's what people think. Like, there's some kind of hub or something that they give us guests. There is none. And that's not us tooting our own horn. But, for instance, Callahan, I had found on Twitter, and I started talking to Callahan for weeks leading up to it. It was just going to be him at first, and things happened, but what I was trying to say is, like, we schedule guests, and, you know, like, we'll go through these runs where we get, like, these big names that's like, whoa, like, how did we get to talk to them? And then we'll look at the calendar and be like, oh, well, we got a couple people. And it always seems to go in cycles. And, like, last week was, like, a pinnacle moment for me. Like, made me fall in love with this podcast, like, again, if that makes any sense. Like, it was like, wow, like, you know. The week before, 2 weeks before, was like, you know, Psycho Sid, and then talking to a band from Sweden and a cave explorer. It's just from Norway, not Sweden. It just, 235 episodes in. We keep trying to find new things, and we it just proves the fact that you can always find something new. You know, there's always a new outlet or new twist or new lane to go through.
Yeah, I mean, I would say about a show, like a lot of people say, well, in order to get a good podcast, you have to stay consistent in what you want to talk about, what you want to do. I say we're more of the potpourri kind of podcast where, you know, we'll get celebrities from time to time. We'll get comedians. Yep. We'll get athletes. But we also dive into, like, the different interesting guests like we're going to have on tonight. I think what I really enjoy about the show is it's really totally different every week. And we're not sitting back saying, oh, let's talk about last week's football game one more time. Right. Let's talk about current events and all. It's literally, it gets sent out there and I'll guarantee you'll never predict what goes from week to week because it's just a weird and wild predicament this show is. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we 1 week we're talking about our personal issues and relationships. The next week we're doing bits on, you know, who I would want to bring back from the dead, you know, celebrity wise. So we try to keep it light. We try to keep it clean. Well, I'll tell you that much. But we also we have a good time. And that John Walsh interview for me was like, it was like a defining moment last week. I was very, 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 very happy with the outcome. They gave us a long time. In fact, they didn't say there was a cutoff time. We didn't want to take up all our time and ended the interview. I feel like they would have gone another hour if we let them.
Yeah, next time let's find out. Let's just keep going. And guys, seriously, I got to get to the studio. No, wait. I want to talk about
your wardrobe. So what wardrobe did you wear on America's Most Wanted? Well, who picked it out? Did you pick it out? Did your wife pick it out? What did they tell you to wear? Go.
Yeah. What was the biggest argument you had about socks?
Yeah, but I really enjoyed last week. So, guys, if they're like episode 234, I would really like you to go back and listen to if you enjoy what you're hearing today. And I know Mike feels the same way.
No.
No,
this podcast is all about me. I want no listeners.
Oh, all right. So we'll fund that short shenanigans one day that you recorded when you went for
greatest episode of all time. Bulgarian Discover card, I think I talked about.
Yeah. We tried this one thing one time where we were going to do like little short riffs, like 10, 15 minutes of solo stuff, which you never know. We could bring that back and do it, but I don't know. We were in my own house, and I remember, Berlo, go ahead, just riff for 15. And I left him. He was talking about like laundry, and then he was talking about 9/11, and then he was just going off. And I think it was like one of those moments, like where Will Ferrell in like Old School, where he blacks out during the during the debate thing. And he's like, I think you didn't. I don't think you had an idea what you said until afterwards.
No. I mean, it's one of those things that was kept in the bottle, and you decided to throw it in the recycling bin. So. I wish I could bring it back, everyone, but that was a once-in-a-lifetime moment. So it's like the Tenacious D song. This was the greatest podcast that nobody heard.
Yeah. So, real quick, guys, you can catch us. There's a couple of new places to catch us. Come on. We are on Wednesdays at 12 p.m. on the comingrightup.org. Their new website, they got a lot of entertainment shows. We happen to be on Wednesdays at 12 and also on the Discover County Network. So those are some new places that we've been added to in the last few weeks.
Look at us. We're spreading our wings.
Oh, yes. So I did the polar plunge this weekend.
As you're wearing your nice little jacket vest.
Yeah, I don't even know if I like this one this year. It's a little too modern for me. It's got like camouflage. I mean, I wore it to work out, but I don't know if I'll wear this one out as much, but... every year, not every year, I've missed a couple years here and there, but I try to do the Polar Plunge, which is a fundraiser for Special Olympics, and we generally have a good time and whatnot. So our team, I guess I should say, raised over $4,000 this year for Special Olympics, which was pretty cool.
Ooh.
But I wanted to tell a story So similar to last week, how you were telling a story about someone that depressed you at Disney, right? A happy time, you're in a happy place, supposedly. I don't know if I would ever be happy either. But, you know, and you were talking about a guy that really kind of like disappointed you and sucked the wind out of your sails. I don't have another term for it. But so the Polar Plunge kind of has a feel like that. It's a happy event. You know, it's like everyone's down there for a reason. You know, everyone's kind of tailgating, having a couple beers, eating food, like whatever, getting ready for this moment where you're jumping in the ocean and being crazy. It's just like a fun event. No one's down there for any like motive, right?
Yeah, no goal other than, you know, raising money for charity.
Yeah, and just, and you know, I'll admit, I do it a little bit for like the good time I have with my cousins and we have like a camaraderie kind of thing.
I did the one year with you. It was a lot of fun. It was an experience. And we chatted about it for a while.
Yeah, yeah. I remember you did that with me. So it's a good time. So you do the fundraising efforts, whatever. So there's two things. There's one, they were there last year, and I was making fun of them a bunch. You go on to the boardwalk, and there's like the extreme like God people with the megaphones and like the Bible verses on their signs and stuff like that, like the reckoning is coming kind of people, like God hates you. You are sinners and you succumb to lust and blah blah blah, and just screaming it at people. Like Mike, if I'm walking down the boardwalk, this guy was 4 feet away with a megaphone, like in people's faces with this stupid sign, like, and there's like three of them, like three lunatics, like.
What? So they're like Westboro Baptist Church, kind
of. I guess. I mean, I didn't see any like derogatory signs per se, but they're calling everyone sinners and that their day of reckoning is coming and God is blah 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 blah. Meanwhile, you got guys in pickle suits, you know, jumping in the ocean for charity. People in superhero outfits. Like, it just brings everyone together down there, and everyone's in a good. Like, what are you doing there? Like, what do you think that guy's thinking?
Somewhere in their minds, they think they're teaching you a lesson. And
do you really think that, or do you think they just want attention?
Well, it's a little of each. I mean, everything I've heard from, like, Westboro Baptists, they're like, oh, we're not being mean. We're just saying this is where your life is taking you to, and then when you die,
do they tell you that
to heaven?
Do they tell you that when you go to their masses on Sunday?
No, they don't take my calls for some reason. But I've heard enough interviews from them where they're like, we're not telling you you're bad. We're not bad people. We're just saying you're putting yourself in a spot where you're going to go to hell. But the funny thing is, when in any of the interviews, they're like, oh, okay, so who's going to heaven? It's pretty much like, well, us. No. So the entire God created the heavens and the earth. He literally did it for you 12 people.
Right, right.
And nobody else.
I still would like to get one of those guys on the show one time.
I tried a little bit. I know they're like the one daughter, she left the church and she was doing, I think she did like Rogan's podcast.
According to iTunes, we are very similar to Rogan and Bill Burr. So, I mean, why
so
not?
If you're the person that was in there, or you're still in there, come on and hop in on Verbal Shenanigans.
Yeah. So like that person, like whatever, you know, you get these weirdos. Everyone's having a good time, like making. But last year, I got a couple drinks beforehand, and I was like videoing myself in front of them, making fun of them. This year, I just ignored them. Gave them like the dirty look, like the, you know, like the eye roll, like, all right, cool, bro. You know, like that kind of eye roll. However you can say that with your face is what I'm trying to say. Like, cool.
Like, did they end up back down? Did they, like, put down their picket and just, like,
no.
Took off?
No, like, my raised eyebrow didn't make them be like, oh, damn it. Like,
save us, Jesus!
let's drop this sign. We're being hateful. He's so right.
And Alex hugged you. You're my hero!
So, the plunge goes well. Obviously, it's fun and whatnot. And, so we're in the parking lot now. It gets really crowded then down there, and you pay for parking, which I think is a sin, you know, on a charity event. Like, pay $25 for parking. If you're not telling me half of that's going to the charity, it's really kind of like you're kind of a dirtbag, which I, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's raising money for a cause, and you're just kind of making a killing off of people parking. But anyway.
Is that the city or just individuals, out of curiosity?
I think it's the people who own the lots. Because they all have different signs and rates and different guys working for them. I'm not sure, though. But this isn't – we're not going down the Jersey Shore on July 3rd, the night before, you know, and trying to find parking. We're going down in the middle of winter where there's no one there, and you're capitalizing on people coming down there. But regardless of the point. So I go and I pay the money in. So the plunge is over, and I go to change, like get some clothes out of the car, some dry clothes. And – So all the cars are packed in on each other, and there's a guy in a pickup truck, basically the size of mine, trying to get in, trying to get out, trying to get in, trying to get out. Like, and there's like two guys guiding them. Like, you can do it, guy. You can do it. Like, kind of rough around the edges, guys. Too. Like, yeah, pull forward, pull forward, pull forward. No, back. Like yelling at this guy. Like, uh-huh. And I know personally, I would be the same way. Sometimes, like, you ever get frustrated in a car parking and you somehow start you stop thinking for a minute and you kind of get frustrated like, oh, what the hell am I doing? Like, you ever parallel park weird and it's like you know, you can't kind of figure it out on the fly?
Yeah, I never parallel park, so anytime I have to do it, it gives me anxiety as is. Right. And then, like, every time I have to parallel park, I forget, so I go a little too far pass the spot, and then like somebody be like, go back, and there'll be somebody behind me. I'm like, I can't go back.
Yeah.
I just get to the point where I'll just drive 5 miles so I can pull into some spot and walk back.
All right, so you'll love this story. So they're saying, you can make it, pull right. And the guy I could see has like a look at it. He's got his windows down, and I'm like next to him. I'm like, the only thing I said to him is like, hey, just turn your wheel all the way to the left. Like, calmly, you know what I mean? Like, just turn on.
Yeah.
And he's not parallel parking. He's trying to get out on a, like a 90-degree angle, and there's a car in front of him. So I know with a pickup truck, it's kind of stressful. They don't have like tight turning radiuses. And the guy's getting back there. Two of them are yelling at him. And he's like, I can't do it. You know, I can't get out. Blah, blah, blah. How am I? They're like, you can get out. Like, whatever. And, okay, so long story short, so he eventually gets out because the guys are guiding him, like, back and forth. And everyone knew he can get out. But all of a sudden, like, so this is a white bearded guy, you know, with sunglasses on. Kind of sounds like he's
Santa impersonator?
Yeah, no.
No.
Kind of sounds like he might have been drinking or whatnot. He's a parking lot attendant. So he gets the guy out. The guy straightens out. And all of a sudden, he just starts yelling, who's your N-word? Who's your N-word, bro? I'm your N-word. I'm your N-word. I'm that N-word. And I'm sitting there changing. And I'm like, dude, like, I normally, like, a lot of times I avoid conflict at all. Okay? I'm just, it's just kind of in my personality. But for some reason, this just—I just looked at him and I went like, "Dude, who talks like that? Like, what are you saying that for? Like, what I just said, like, well, who talks like that? Who talks like that?" And he goes, "I'm real, man. I'm real. I'm not politically correct." I'm like, "I said you just decided that you can just yell, you can just yell the N-word because you got a guy out of a parking spot."
Yeah, I don't know, like, the history of when the term came to be where it's bad and when African Americans turned around to make it as like a strength thing for them. But I highly doubt it started with somebody getting out of a parking spot.
Yeah.
Now, if I can just stretch for a minute, Scott, I'm going on a limb and saying that did not occur.
Right. That wasn't like a big moment in history. Like,
no.
Like
George Washington Carver got out of the parking spot. Who's your N-word?
Peanuts for everyone. Peanuts for everyone. So I don't know why, Mike, but it like really bothered me. Like, I was like, just like, who talks like that? And I'm looking at the guy, and he's still like shell shocked from getting out and being yelled at. And I just looked at him like, hey, man. Because he still had to, like, back out and get some guidance. I'm like, hey, take care, man. And he's like, ah, take care. He's like, that's crazy. That's crazy. I'm like, I know. Like, I would have had a hard time getting out, too. And I'm like, and who talks like that? He's like, I don't know. He's like, I don't know why he's yelling at. And there's, like, a couple people, like, you know, in their towels and whatnot, changing in different spots, like, looking at, like, what the hell was that? Like, I don't know. And the guy gets, like, of course, like, confrontational, just kind of not really to me. Just like, yeah, that's what I talk, bro. That's what I talk. Like, you know, whatever. And I'm like, yeah, do whatever. But I the only thing I said to him was like, dude, you're a clown, man. And I just walked away. And like, I was like, Alex, like, I walked back to her and she's like, what's the matter? I'm like, these people are assholes, man. People, like, what is that?
You think he went home and he's like telling the story? I was keeping it real. And this white dude is like, I'm a clown. I'm like, no, you're not. You're a PC clown. I keep it real when I talk.
You know, and
I don't even use that backup camera, yo.
And here's the thing, that's the kind of person that, like, a person of color or an African American, like, will see, you know, like, and be like, that's what they're, you know, that's where who's representing the people down in this region. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that is not the way 90% of people are. And it's always people like that that paint the picture for a huge group. No matter what group it is, it's always these assholes, these bad seeds, if you will. I mean, I hate that term. It sounds very, very juvenile. But
10%ers, Scott. Let's just call it as is. Yeah, 90% good. Don't play around with the 10%ers.
It just... It really bothered me. And it's like we're at a charity event where there are African Americans around participating in the event. You know, like, really? You're just yelling that in the middle of the parking lot? I don't know. Just very odd. Very odd.
Yeah. But just keep it real when I make my K turns. You know that. I make them KKK turns, yo.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
one other note on that. I noticed the fiance, she chose not to dive into the water, huh?
No. She's out. She did the one year that I threw her into the ocean.
Yeah, that's what I was getting to. The year where you hugged her and you're like, wait a minute, you're dry. And she's like, well, I'll put my feet in. And then you just like, all right, that's it. And you picked her up and brought her into the ocean.
Oh, if you're going in, you're going in, man. If you're participating. Yeah.
People are paying charity money for you to get cold, your ass is gonna get shivering.
Yeah. So she just came down to support. Now she's on the support squad these days. So Berlo, I guess it's time to get to our guest here. So before you, it's funny. Like, we've been doing this for a long time, and I feel like Donald Trump was just elected like the other day. That's what it feels like to me.
Good times. Continue.
Yeah, great times. He's been great.
Yeah.
Obviously. Although I gotta admit, his tweet last night cracked me up. I've said a million times he would be the hardest comic to follow ever. Because he would say any single thing to whatever room he's in.
Yeah, I'll give him credit. One tweet I thought he was like the most savage was when Elizabeth Warren was running.
Oh, that was good too.
When he took her campaign thing, Warren 2020, and he put it in front 1/1/2020th or something to that effect. I'm like, damn, you're an a-hole, but damn, that was good.
I liked this one personally. All right. So he tweeted, hold the date. We'll be having one of the biggest gatherings in the history of Washington, D.C. on July 4th. It'll be called A Salute to America and will be held at the Lincoln Memorial. Major fireworks display, entertainment, and addressed by your favorite president, me.
Drop the mic.
I mean, where did that come from? That's just him being like, you know, you guys bash me and rip me apart all day long. Like, this is my, like, I'm going to give you even more to feed on. Like, and, like, that's something if, like, okay, say, like, Obama did that, right? Like, a polarizing figure or whatever. But people, like, would laugh, maybe, and, like, kind of laugh it off. Now it's just like, we're going to get crazy about whatever he said. You know, he's just throwing that to the sharks and, like, just kind of laughing as the reactions happen.
Yeah. He's a guy who farts in the elevator and enjoys the fact they talk about him after he gets on his floor.
Yeah. 100%. So we have a guest today. He's actually running for president, Mike.
Oh.
Yeah. We've had some big winners on this show that have run for president.
Yeah, we had Cecil Ince and Barbara Jo Waymire. trying to run under the libertarian platform.
I wonder if, like, Trump's going through his list of people that he fired, like, you know, the backups, and, like, some of those names start popping up. Like, Cecil... Cecil Inch. All right. Come on down.
I might have more respect for him then. And it's like... I don't want to vote for him, but he's got a verbal shenanigan guest on there, so I got to keep it real.
Yeah. Zoltan Esteban.
He was the transhumanist party who I actually voted for in the 2016 election, and he's been on our show two times.
Twice, yeah. So today on the show, we have very fun, unique, entertaining guests, which we try to. This is where we thrive. Like this is our favorite type of people. You may have seen him in several elections pop up and doing different things, throwing glitter bombs on politicians. He's currently running for Libertarian president candidacy. The one and only. You might know him with the boot on his head. He wears a boot on his head, giant beard. The one and only Vermin Supreme. So, let's give it a listen.
Yep.
Hello.
Hey, is this Vermin?
Yes, it is.
Vermin and Scott from Verbal Shenanigans. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Let me just merge in my co-host real quick. Vermin, you should be hearing the lovely voice of Mike over there. Mike, you hear Vermin? Vermin, Mike?
Hello.
I heard his voice. Yep.
It's angelic. Yes, it's angelic.
That is my voice. Thank you.
Vermin, it's a pleasure to talk to you for a few minutes. I guess it's very appropriate to talk to you today because today happens to be President's Day, the day that we're recording this.
Well, thank you for your well wishes. It has been a very delightful President's Day.
Now, let me ask you, you've ran in the past under several different platforms and different parties and whatnot and different elections and you've been all over the place. Is there plans?
I'm very flexible, I guess.
is there plans for you to run in this next election?
Naturally, I would not want to leave my constituents in the lurch like that. There'd be terrible disappointment in the mere fact that it's so much fun and a simple thing to do. Then you can bet your sweet ass that yes. I am running for president of America.
Supreme 2020, baby.
Now, interestingly enough, I am currently seeking the Libertarian Party nomination. Truth be told, I'm a front runner, if you will, if you're following the Libertarian Party gossip on the various internet.
Yeah, we were actually just talking right before you got on. We had... we've had Zoltan Esteban on a few times, who I believe is also, we were just talking about how he's running in the Libertarian Party. So you might have.
Yes, he has. I believe he's currently withdrawn, or at least according to Wikipedia.
Oh.
But yes, I've managed to pick up a fair amount of support in the Libertarian Party and enough to be a potential contender, which is a very strange and unusual place to be for an essentially fictitious candidate such as myself, one whose career loosely defined to this point has been harassing political parties and candidates. So to find myself welcomed into the Libertarian Party has been a very eye-opening and wonderful experience. And, of course, there seems to be enough in the Libertarian platforms and philosophy that I agree with and can work with a clean conscience. They are indeed anti-authoritarian. They are anti-state. They are against the prison industrial complex, against crony capitalism, and for the non-aggression principle, which states that one should only use violence in self-defense. So these are things that I fully agree, and minor economic squibbles aside, I utilize the concept of a pony-based economy to sort of short-circuit everything. Thank you.
You've been doing this for a while, and like we kind of talked about briefly, you've moved from party to party when you've run for president. Is there anything in particular that drives you over to other teams, or is it just for the fun of it, for lack of a better term?
Well, ultimately, in the past, in the various contests that I have run in, I have looked at the slate very carefully, and it's a strategic decision mainly. It's a given that I do very well against incumbents. When I ran against Obama as an incumbent, I got more votes in the New Hampshire primary than I did in the 2016 campaign, even though I got higher up in the overall ranking. When I decided to run for Attorney General of Kansas, I was originally looking at running for governor, but there's the field was very crowded, and I didn't want to step on any of the kids' toes, so I went down ticket as the Attorney General. So ultimately, yes, there is a strategic decision involved in what party and which field to run in. Now, currently, of course, since I'm giving the full push to the Libertarian nomination, I am paying them lots of lip service and lots of platitudes. So if you like liberty and freedom, come on over and join us. If not, you hate ponies.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because the beginning of this interview, if people didn't know who we're talking to, this might have sounded like a very, you know, very serious, typical candidate. But we got to get into some of your, you know, what makes you and what makes you interesting. Not the fact that you just ran for so many things. You've been vermin supreme now, according to the internet anyway, for decades at this point. You have ran on everything from ponies to zombie apocalypse to time travel research. Where do you get, like, you're, you know, we see you with the boot on your head and your crazy outfits and whatnot, and you take it as a joke. But when you actually talk and you start getting things, you find out that you actually have some purpose behind these things. Where do you get your ideas, and how do you like develop them and decide, I'm going to go with this pony thing and go full force with it?
Well, I would have to say that I've been very lucky in a sense, in that I've been able to essentially run on the same freaking platform for a really long time, and that is certainly a wonderful thing. There's new audiences coming in every presidential cycle, and it seems like there's just enough time in between them that those who don't know are very excited to learn, and those that do are happy to be reminded. You know, the mandatory toothbrush law was referenced as early as 1987 when I ran for mayor of Baltimore, Maryland. It was totally fleshed out in 1996, I think, is when I actually wrote the mandatory toothbrushing law itself, which was before the Patriot Act, I might add, and then, of course, went through the roof and went all viral in 2012. I will admit, it's very difficult to be able to find certain platform planks that, you know, they have to have a certain cultural resonance, and I think that's what I've been very lucky in being able to do. You know, the toothbrush is an object, you know. Everybody has one. Everybody touches it every day. So when I start talking about mandatory toothbrushing and make toothbrushing the law of the land, it's a very simple leap to make. In fact, that originally came from Massachusetts. They were the first state in the nation to put forth mandatory seatbelt laws. And I looked at that, and they had a popular bumper sticker that said, buckle up, it's the law. And I just said, well, that's a great idea, sure, but does the government need to mandate such behavior? And so, of course, I thought, what would be the next silliest thing to legislate? And that turned out to be toothbrushing. And just the linking of the two, I think, makes a very powerful impact. The mandatory toothbrush, I mean, the zombie preparedness, of course, zombies are very, very big these days and have been for a while, more so than vampires even, and robots and aliens, I'll be pulling out later in my campaign. And the, of course, the zombie energy turbine concept was actually presented to me by a constituent, Robert McGill, and of course I stole it happily and ran with it. It's been very popular and important. Of course, the time travel, going back in time to kill baby Hitler, which also had become quite popular. Real journalists asking real candidates that question, Jeb Bush, and they asked Ben Carson if he would abort baby Hitler. So it's almost become a mainstream query.
Right, right, right.
And that, of course, that's simply it's an ethics question. It's in most ethics courses. And they want to know if you go back and kill a baby. And, of course, I just sort of co-opted that and wrote it for all it was worth until it was pumped up into the popular consciousness. The free ponies for all Americans. now, this is truly, arguably, one of my most successful campaign promises. It is a federal pony identification system. You must have your pony with you at all times. And free ponies, I mean... I believe I interjected that into the entire political lexicon, and now it has been embraced and ripped off by Hillary Clinton in her book, attributing it to Bernie Sanders, and it's a regular phrase, it seems. Well, a fat lot of good it has done me, though. But yeah. So it's the interstate roller coaster, for example. You know, I have the lesser known planks. But most elite are consist of totalitarian public work projects, I guess. Since your highness has been eroding the gum line of our great nation for long enough and must be stopped.
It's a valid point.
I'm in. I'm in.
Now, you were bringing up Hillary. Is that why you protested her book and demanded that the state allow you protest with a pony a couple years back?
Yes, absolutely. Last December, the Concord Police Department were attempting to prohibit me from bringing a live pony to the Hillary Clinton book signing. And, of course, Hillary Clinton, as I had mentioned, had sort of ripped off the free pony concept and included it in her book. And so, yes, I felt it was very important to go up there and bring live ponies, and I had to sue in federal court in order to make that happen. Sometimes you have to fight for your right to pony.
Yeah. Now, I'd be remiss if we didn't ask you. What is like your background prior to doing Vermin Supreme, and where did the idea for the boot and the outlandish outfits and the persona you have developed over the years, where did that all start?
It started in Baltimore, Maryland, back in the 80s. I was plugged into the art weirdo circuit, the original independent music circuit, and I was doing sort of these big proto-raves. We lived in a big house, had giant parties, and then we got kicked out of that and had to find random spots that I could take over and have too many bands and too many kegs of beer, parking garages and warehouses and the like under false pretenses. That led to doing bookings and promotions at a couple of nightclubs. And, of course, back in those days, it was still a little punk rocky, and people were utilizing stage names and various callings. And so, Vermin Supreme was initially a stage character. All booking agents, all promoters were Vermin, and I was to be the Vermin Supreme. And I ran Vermin Supreme's fabulous Galaxy Lounge. And that lasted for a little bit. I couldn't live up to the promise of being as sleazy as I was pretending to be. And so that ended. So I was still in Baltimore. I was sort of burnt out on it with no real reason to be there. But one day I was trying to find a reason to be there. I had decided I would run for mayor. So that was essentially a project for something to do as opposed to anything political. Of course, shortly thereafter, I did leave Baltimore. The Great Peace March for Global Nuclear Disarmament rolled through town. It had come from L.A. to D.C., and there was 5,000 people marching with it at this point, and all the logistical equipment required to move such a large demonstration of people down the road. And I picked up some clean clothes at the thrift store, a cheap sleeping bag, and walked with them to D.C., met a bunch of anarchists that I had not been really too familiar with. There was a spin-off group from this Great Peace March called Seeds of Peace, which had some of the equipment that was enough to move hundreds of people down the road. And so I began walking for peace and nuclear disarmament. And at the same time, I was starting to attend the national and the local rainbow gatherings out in the woods. A bunch of hippies out in the woods in an anarchist type of society with no one in charge and everybody sharing and providing our own security and everything else that needs to be done. So I was starting to attend national political events, protests, and I was attending these national rainbow gatherings. So that started to give me a little bit of a national base. I was bringing my running for office thing along with me, and so I was starting to present myself as a candidate to these various audiences, which were indeed national in nature. So I started to develop a national fan base, if you will, or at least a network of people who knew me. I started to book low-rent tours, sort of me in a backpack and calling up people randomly and just seeing if they could put me up or ride me to my next campaign stop. So it was a very do-it-yourself, low-rent type of touring that I was doing. And then, of course, the rainbow gatherings are so big and massive and wonderful, and there's so much freedom to be had at these events that I was spent a number of years honing my clowning skills, you know, because that audience allowed me to be as ridiculous as I could possibly be. I mean, there's very few audiences where you can, you know, do dick humor with your dick in real time and, you know, holding up a magnifying glass and saying it's a hippie penis enlarger and, you know, just the things that you couldn't do in polite company, but they embrace that sort of crazy shit. And then I also discovered that after a while that security was indeed one of the services provided by the Rainbow Gathering, and one of these in Walking with Cops, we provide. And so I was bringing clowning and humor into security areas, and then I was we would walk with police. I would do 8-hour shifts of walking and escorting a phalanx of half a dozen of Alabama state troopers, for example, through the gathering, trying to keep them out of trouble and propagandize them at the same time. And that's where I started learning some of these chops of like interacting with police and making them laugh and using humor to diffuse tense situations. And it was just a short leap to bring it all out into the streets, into a riot police world. And so there I am with the boot and the bullhorn, and have really made a difference. I'd like to plug the movie, the documentary, Who is Vermin Supreme?
Yes.
It's by filmmaker Stephen Derrick. It is available on Amazon Prime and Xbox and a whole bunch of other places. I think it gives a good overview of what it is that I do. You know, I mean, the sort of funny, ha-ha, you know, I'm running for president thing, you know, believe me, that is a terribly simple and easy thing to do. And quite frankly, I think the only reason that I've become so well known at doing it is because nobody else is doing it, number one. And number two, I just never stopped. I just never stopped doing it. And here I am still doing it. And so it's just sort of all these various skill sets that were organically acquired, one building on top of the other, until I have become this person that I am.
I've seen you presented in a few debates, and when you're dealing with the people chatting with you about running for president, do they respect what you're doing? Do they kind of try to almost skip you over or cut you off? How does the general population treat you when you're up there?
I believe that I'm generally well respected in my craft, if you will. I think people like to play along with it. But I think it operates on a number of different levels. I believe that different people ascribe different levels of import to it. You know, I mean, it ranges from people thinking what I do is like super important to people who think it's really stupid. And of course, that's, you know, I'm running into that dichotomy in my quest for the Libertarian nomination. Because primarily, let me say that in the pretend world, my pretend portion of the campaign, the fantasy part of the campaign, I mean, let's face it, it's intergalactic. It's huge. It's a monster. And, you know, there's ponies. There's zombies. It's just, why? There's no stopping it. But the very interesting thing for me, as the person who has helped sort of bring this all about, is where it meets the real world. I mean, that is where it becomes very interesting. I mean, that's where I had to, you know, go to probate court to legally change my name to Vermin Supreme so that I can get on real ballots, so that I can, when I sue the police occasionally for false arrests, so that I can be on the legal documents, so that when a cop comes up to me and wants to know what my name is, and I say Vermin Supreme, and they say, no, it's not, and I say, yes, it is, and after a reasonable amount of discussion, perhaps I will provide my identification to them to prove that. You know, getting on the ballots, or, you know, raising money from people. It's sort of this year, more so than any other year, I've upped my political game, if you will, where I'm actually put myself into the position, which is analogous or deepens the parody of the politician, where I'm actually money grubbing, where I actually now have a 527 not-for-profit organization registered with the IRS. It's called Pony Up America, and you can send money via PayPal to Pony Up America at Crazy Circus Dogs, or you can send checks and all these things. I am currently seeking the threshold for federal election matching funds. If I can raise $5,000 in each of 20 states, the FEC will double that. And so, you know, up till now, I've gotten pretty far working with very, very little.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Prior, you know, I mean, I would spend maybe $3,000 in election year, $1,000 to get on the ballot in New Hampshire, and the rest would be travel and bumper stickers.
Right.
So I have high hopes that with a larger budget, that it can be a much bigger and crazier and a more amazing spectacle.
Vermin, first off, I want to thank you for your time. I'd love to get you back on again in the future, talk, you know, maybe when we get closer to the elections and whatnot, and talk to you. First off, so two-part question. Where can people go, you know, say hi to you or check you out, get the overall image of you? Where's the best place for them to go? And two, how has this day and age of the internet and social media and being able to produce your own videos and reach out directly to people, how has that helped your cause and kept it alive?
Oh, well, obviously, I mean, I've been running for so long, you know, I've sort of taken it to a certain level, but the internet certainly broke things wide open. I mean, in 2012 at that debate where I glitter-bombed Randall Terry,
yep.
It made me more internet famous than I could ever have imagined. If I could have imagined it,
right.
I would have had my merch trip a little tighter, if you know what I mean, to take advantage of that. So now it's just like it's just an amazing tool for sure. The being a meme, being a living meme, it's very exciting.
It's awesome.
Very interesting. I mean, when things pick up, it's like every day, you know, people are creating art. Vermin Supreme's dank meme stash. I'd say Facebook is where a lot of the activity takes place. We have the Vermin Supreme for President official blue checked page. We've got the Vermin Supreme's dank meme stash with all the craziest latest Vermin Supreme memes. Of course, verminstream.com is really just a portal to donations, but you can go there. We'll flush that out. Just Googling my freaking name,
yep,
is really hours of entertainment. I mean, I do not produce content. You know, I'm not a YouTube producer, but I am simply a subject of a whole lot of different people's interpretation or collaboration. I mean, this right here, this is a wonderful little collaboration. I very much enjoy chatting with you and trying to demystify it.
So, I love,
you know, it's a big thing, but and I apologize if it's straight shtick, because, you know, sometimes in some interviews it's all about being in character and talking about the pony.
I like the backstories.
I appreciate that opportunity. I'd also like to plug my book. It's called iPony, Blueprint for a New America.
Nice.
It is a book about a future long after a Vermin Supreme presidency, after everybody has their ponies, after time travel is used in foreign policy, after zombie power fuels the nation, and after the secret dental police have set up checkpoints every couple hundred yards or so. It is essentially a warning from the people of the future to you, the people of the past, or your present, that Vermin Supreme is a madman and must be stopped.
Vermin.
And you can...
Go ahead.
You can get that book at iPonyBook.com or iPonyThebook.com. There's a bunch of amazing illustrators that I've brought into the project, and it is a wondrous, horrible future that I have in store for you.
I love it. Hey, you know, if a reality TV star can become president, why can't a guy wearing a boot? I picture your inauguration with everybody wearing foam boot hats, you know, in the audience. So why not?
President Dick Cheney by his side.
Exactly. Exactly. Vermin, thank you.
Yeah, thank
you so much for a few minutes, man. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I'm really glad we got together. I thank you for the invitation. As I had said initially, it would certainly take some perseverance on your part, and I appreciate your perseverance and hounding me until we could get together and have this little chat.
All right, Mike, Vermin Supreme.
Got my vote. It's over.
I feel like your vote's very easy to just grab, you know? Like, if you're on the podcast, you get it.
I'm telling you, the Georgia Electoral College is going the supreme route. I'm marking it right now. Put it down, CNN. I ain't flaring. Fox News, you know where it's at.
I feel like if Ray Hulley, the American Gladiator that was on our show, said she was running, you'd be like, she got my vote.
Yep. No trap when you vote for Zap.
So, Mike, I wanted to quickly bring up, we've had... You know, Vermin Supreme, hilarious and interesting, running for president. I wanted to bring up nine of the craziest people who have ever run for president.
They all got my vote.
Mike's like, I don't see any crazy with them at all.
No.
All right, Pat Paulson. Comedian Pat Paulson was approached by the Smothers Brothers with the idea of running for president in 1968. He replied, "Why not? I can't dance. Besides, the job has a good pension plan and I'll get a lot of money when I retire." Paulson's political career is grounded in satire, and he would often publicly answer questions with the phrase, "I feel that is too directly bound to its own anguish to be anything other than a cry of negation carrying within itself the seeds of its own destruction. However, to get the meat of the matter, I will come right to the point and take note of the fact of the heart of the issue, and the final analysis escapes me." Whoa. While he was never truly serious about holding office, Paulson did come in second place to Bill Clinton in the New Hampshire in the New Hampshire for the Democratic primary. 921 votes he got.
I'm still trying to figure out how the "I can't dance" part fit into that whole scenario.
Well, I'm guessing he's thinking like presidents are kind of like stiff, especially back in those days. Like, we didn't have Barack, you know, like a little flavor.
Why is it the one black president has flavor, Scott? Just out of curiosity.
You know, listen, it's a stereotype that I wish we had. I wish everyone was like, you know, those big, goofy, gangly white people can dance.
That is true.
Yeah. Yeah, you understand. They never look at you, Burlow, on the street and be like, man, that guy could probably really cut a rug.
Yeah. Nobody does a circle at a club. It puts me in the middle, and it's like, you got to prove it now, Berlin.
Although, I wish that scenario
was because they'll be sitting in that circle for quite a while and be like, you know what? You did it. Ace of Smiths.
Number eight, Mike Gravel. Alaskan Senator Mike Gravel gained fame through a series of bizarre and super unsettling election videos during the election of 2008. One involved the stone-faced Gravel staring into a camera and throwing a huge rock into a lake. The other is literally 7 minutes of a cracking fire. Needless to say, he didn't win.
He's still better than the last Alaska person to try to run for something.
Yeah. Maybe we can get Mike Gravel on the podcast. Joan,
that'd be awesome.
Number seven, Joan Jett Black. Not Joan Jett, Joan Jett Black. She's a writer and performer who ran for president twice, once in 92 under the slogan "Lick Bush" in 92. And once more in 96 under the slogan "Lick Slick Willie" in 96. Apparently, she's not very creative.
She does open mics, this person.
Black ran on the Queer Nation party ticket and unfortunately lost twice. Badly.
Mm. Well, yeah. She still has a great career at Scotty's Comedy Cove.
Mm. Number six, Mike, you may have heard of her. Roseanne Barr. Roseanne Barr. Plenty of celebrities who attempted to run for president, but Roseanne Barr got as far as filing with the Federal Election Commission in 2012 under the Green Tea Party ticket. Barr's candidacy promoted mental health and meditation, which I'm down with, but also promised to send Wall Street bankers to re-education camps and be executed by beheading.
What? I mean, she's in Israel right now. I don't think we could vote for her.
Did you know that Roseanne Barr was hit by a car when she was young and was in like mental hospitals because she got hit in the head?
I did not know that, Scott.
Yeah. Rogan had her on the podcast, and she talked about it. You know, like, she's very, very mentally ill. She's very open about it. But she, she was hit in the head by a car and was in the hospital for months and spent a lot of time in mental hospitals and, like, special schools and stuff like that, which would explain some of her behavior, you know?
That would explain the tweet and everything that occurred afterwards.
Well, she even said the tweet, like, she was, you know, she was on, like, a bunch of Ambien and drinking and, like, if you've heard stories about Ambien, like, people, like, wake up in other states, get on planes and stuff like that. I actually kind of believe her.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of believe her, but also at the same time, it's kind of like when I say, you know, you find out the real person drunk, because that thing was somewhere in her head. Now, maybe she is telling the truth where she's like, I thought she was a white person and I was making it funny, but...
Yeah, I don't know about that. Yeah, I mean, that part of it. But Berlo, this guy might have your vote. I feel like this guy's right in your wheelhouse. Jonathan Albert, the Impaler Sharky. Yep, we could have had a guy called the Impaler in the White House, but here are all the reasons we should be glad this ex-wrestler lost. Ex-wrestler, you love wrestling. Sharky is a self-proclaimed vampire and only drinks the blood of women because women are beautiful. They have such beautiful necks and arms. His policy on crime involves torturing and impaling criminals. He called former President H.W. Bush a communist and a wuss, and he once recorded an album of Elvis Presley covers. While he lost in 2012, Sharky plans to run again in 2020.
Yeah, I mean... I could see him, like, Bill Clinton on sax and him just doing his Elvis impersonations, maybe do a dual ticket, get the Clintons back into office. I could see this.
Okay. I feel
like... Make a nice little smooth album right there. I mean...
You know, maybe we should get him on the show, too. John the Impaler. Yeah. Number four, James Travacant. Have you ever looked at the White House and just gone, man, I wish there was a convicted felon running for the country? That could have been the case had James Travacant won in the 1988 presidential election. He was part of the House of Representatives in Ohio, but got expelled after taking bribes, filing false tax returns, and forcing his coworkers to perform chores on his houseboat. Travacant served 7 years in jail and was released late in 2009. He served as a guest speaker at the Tea Party protest before he was killed in a 2014 farm accident.
So he has a houseboat and he has a farm?
Listen, rule number one in life, don't trust anybody with a houseboat.
No. There's nobody with sound financial planning that had a houseboat.
No, definitely not. Yeah, go ahead.
That's basically the trailer park of the sea.
It's almost worse because it's on the sea. The implication. Number three, Basil Marceau. I think it's French. Our listeners might know this guy.
In France, you know, hook us up with our future president.
Yeah. Tennessee's own Basil Marceau has run for office unsuccessfully numerous times. Most recently in 2010, has made a myriad of outlandish promises like banning police officers from charging suspects for anything except moving vehicle violations and essentially granting Americans immunity from the law with a statement from his website, "Vote for me, and if I win, I will immune you from all state crimes for the rest of your life." Oh, he also released a Christmas song.
Well, it would definitely hurt our podcast interview with John Walsh, if all he talks about on the show is this guy was speeding.
Right.
This guy doesn't know how to parallel park. I mean, maybe your guy from the Polar Bear Plunge end up on the show, and you could be a part of the reenactment, and then you could join us on the ID club.
Yeah. Get my tattoo.
Exactly.
Jello Biafra, legendary frontman of the Dead Kennedys and punk guru, Jello Biafra attempted to snake the Green Party nomination in 2000. He lost to Ralph Nader. He was second to Ralph Nader. Biafra chose death row inmate Mumia Abu-Jamal as his running mate, promised to enact a maximum wage, abolish the military, and lower the voting age to 5.
I feel like the Green Party is always the celebrity party. I think Gary Coleman tried to run for governor that year that Schwarzenegger won under Green Party. And if I recall, Howard Stern was going to be the Green Party when he was running for governor of New York City.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's a way to find an in one. Okay, so you wouldn't do one or the two, but if you go to the other ones, like, there's a chance of, like, at least getting some, you know, going further than you ever would, you know, like in the other two. So I don't know. Berlo, would you like to guess at number one?
You.
No, that would be terrible.
Ah, oh, that'd been sweet. That could have been your running mate.
Vice President Berlo.
Yeah. Snake milk for all the land. Was it John Schneider? That's the only thing I can think of.
Berlo, number one, Vermin Love Supreme.
Oh,
who was just on our show. Vermin Love Supreme is a performance artist and all-around weirdo who has been known to walk around with a boot on his head while carrying an enormous toothbrush. Berlo, on our show today. Number one on the list from Thrillist.com.
He wasn't a weirdo. I have very malice towards Thrillist. He was a very sweet gentleman, and he took our questions. So, how dare you, Thrillist, and your...
Number one on the list, pal. So, one and only Vermin Supreme. Mm. All right, brother, what do you got?
I got a game for us, Scotty.
A game.
The name of the game for today is also on the show. And this is how it goes. As much as we like to brag about the different guests that we have on here, sometimes our banter gets a little interesting, and I like to go back and rewind it. So I'm going to give you a phrase that was one of our also on the shows. Oh, and I'll help you with the episode number, and you have to guess who was the guest that week.
So this is something that somebody said.
Yeah, it's basically our descriptions of a show on our podcast page where we say also on the show.
Okay. Okay.
And I'll basically give you some of the stuff we talked about on the show, and then you just got to tell me who was our guest that day.
Who was the guest? Oh, boy.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Number one, also on the show, recent comedy gigs, Mike's wife hitting him in the nuts, and more. Episode 231, Scotty. Was that DJ Bornshine? Was it Psycho Sid? Was it Chris Barron? Or was it John Fratelli?
I'm going to go. Read it one more time. I think I know this one.
DJ Bornshine?
No, read the quote. Read the quote.
Also on the show, recent comedy gigs, Mike's wife hitting him in the balls, and more.
I like the... How you read that?
Thank you.
I'm gonna go. I think that was Psycho Sid. That was only like 2 weeks ago.
That was Psycho Sid.
Yes,
that was correct, Scotty.
Da-da-da-da.
All right, number two. Also on the show, how to address someone with an obvious facial wound. Episode 213. Was that A.G. Mattioli, Brandon Novak, Lucy Sprogan, or Gunnar Esiason?
All right, so as I'm playing the final countdown underneath you, the facial wound I know is your is your facial shower door that you had that one time.
That's correct.
Now, I know that wasn't that long ago.
Episode 213.
213. And we're now at 235, meaning it was somewhere, so 213, 20-something episodes ago, halfway through the year last year. I'm going to go with Lucy Spraggan.
It was our returning guest, A.J. Mattioli's guy.
Now I got to stop the music because I wasn't triumphant.
All right. All right. Number three. Also on the show, Mike's new home and Taylor's cat and Scott's poop mishap. That was episode 205. Was it Reed Booth?
Hold on.
Jim Miller?
Now I'm thinking about what my actual poop mishap was.
I think it was something where you were waiting for a bathroom at work, if I recall. And you're having like stomach issues and not finding an open one.
I know exactly which one that is now.
So episode 205, is that Reed Booth, Jim Miller, Ryan Hogan, and Bob Rush, or Pete Coriale?
So that poop mishap happened right before the summer. We interviewed. I'm going to go with, I think it was D, Pete Coriale.
You are correct, Scott.
Dun, 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 dun.
2-1.
Pete Coriale, one of my favorite comedians. He does a beautiful podcast with Sebastian Maniscalco, some guy that, you know, you guys might have heard of.
Might have. Yeah. And he told me I had more of a southern accent than one of the guys from, who was it? Larry the Cable Guy. That's who he compared me to.
Yeah. So it was my interview of the year last year. I loved it. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Also on the show, Scott's moving out, Berlew fending off the KKK, and the Vegas Knights. That was episode 198. Scott, was that Don LaGreca and John Fryer? Was it Katra Corbett and Kerry Kimmel, Gary Goodridge, or Kirby Chambliss?
Don LaGreca.
You are correct.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
3 out of 4 so far. You're enjoying this game, aren't you?
I am.
All right. Number 5. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Also on the show, Mike is already the king of Georgia. Scott has some wild experiences with ghouls at Acme. And we go through a March Madness of our former guests. Episode 194. Is that Andrew W.K. and Peter Biljum, Rob himself, Michael Glenn, or Sailing Totem?
Michael Glenn.
Scott, you are amazing. That's 4 for you. 4 out of 5.
That's right, baby.
Are you ready for number 6?
Yes.
Also on the show, Scott fails miserably at a Trump versus MLK game.
Oh, God.
We learn about Scott's love of cold meat, and the guys submit their picks for their Me Too pool.
Which we never kept on. I wonder.
Well, it was 1-0 you was the final answer. That was episode 184. Was that The Gift of Gab? Mark Paul Zaloom and Matt Weingarten, Al Snow and Zapp, or Don Jameson and Rich Benning?
Don Jameson.
It was Beekman, Paul Zaloom, and Matt Weingarten Dig In. Why we didn't call the episode Beekman and Dig In is another story.
I don't know. What do we got? What we got? 10 total?
Number 7. We got 3 more here, Scotty.
All right.
Also on the show.
Do I always say also on the show, or is that?
I think it works for this bit. Oh, okay. All right. Also on the show, Herlew's one-eyed ex-co-worker, Scott's experience with an extremely oily man named Kenny, Eli Manning, and we play a good old round of Dirtbag of the Week.
Wait, that was episode 178. Oily was Man?
What's up?
What was that? I had an experience with an oily man.
That's what it's marked as. Scott's experience with an extremely oily man named Kenny.
I don't even know what this is. The fact that I
made you go back and listen to the episode.
The fact that
friend.
I've blocked out an oily man named Teddy is kind of scary to me. Like
Kenny, not Teddy.
Oh, Kenny. Yeah, no.
Yeah, it took me a while to remember my one-eyed ex-coworker, but I remembered it later on today.
What were the options?
Your options are Stolar, Scott Dickers, Mo Vaughn, or Ajay Naidu.
I'm going to go Stolar.
It was Ajay Naidu.
Damn it, from Office Space.
All right, number eight. Also on the show, we also discuss The Walking Dead, Scott's sick days of hacky sacking, and more. Episode 172. Was that John Lear and Lewis Watson, Trent Dilfer, Mark Summers, or Bishop Brian Alouette?
Hacky Sack Days, Walking Dead. I'm going to go with B.
I'm sorry, it's A. It was John Lear and Lewis Watson. Caveman and Sexy Englishman, if I recall the name of the episode. All right, Scott.
That's a long time ago now.
Yeah. We've gone 4-4, Scotty, so this is going to be the tiebreaker for
this
you.
This is it.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Also on the show, Furlough's trip to a Cape May ghost tour, moral dilemmas, and Scott ripping his pants at a wedding. Episode 169. Was that Ben Wyman and Pumpkin Chunkin', Lucky Chops and Dave Murray, Kazuki James, or Matt Pinfield?
Oh, I'm going to go with Lucky Chops, the trombone band we interviewed.
Scott, congratulations, you won the game.
Yes.
5-4.
5-4. Can I give a speech? Can I give a speech?
Yeah, go ahead. It's your show, I guess so.
Guys, I want to thank you for the support over the years and all these great episodes. But when you win an award like this, sometimes you want to come clean. And 4 out of the 5 ones I got right, I absolutely cheated on.
That's what I kind of figured, because I was watching you trying to look up the answer. And let's see, as I'm just seeing you type there.
Well, it was either go 0-9 or try to hang in there a little bit, get a fighter's punch in. So if you said the episode, I was like, oh, and I'm typing the episode real quick. There was one I actually typed word for word what you said, and it popped up in Google. I was like, yes. but yes, guys, sorry, I cheated on that one. I'll cheat again if we do it. So I guess that's it, man. I guess it's time to get the hell out of here. Vermin Supreme. Mike, what did you learn on Verbal Shenanigans today?
I learned that America gives a horse crap about this country, but our future president's going to give us a horse in our stable.
That's correct. That's correct.
I learned that in politics, you can't trust Roseanne Barr, but you can trust people who just want to blow up everything.
you're accurate. You're accurate on that. Anything else you learned today?
I learned that no matter how hard I put time into a game, Scott will just cheat to look good.
Pretty accurate also. I consider it more than looking good. It was just saving the bit, guys. If I failed nine times straight, you wouldn't love me. You would just think I'm an imbecile. And they still do. Mike, I learned that wearing a boot on your head can advance you in your career.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I learned that I have absolutely no memory.
No, of the show?
Yeah, yep. Yeah. Let me be honest, though. You think you would do better at that quiz if I just randomly gave you things?
Well, make a game and we'll figure it out.
No, I'm saying, honestly, like when you were going through that and making the game, were you like, I would never know this? Or you were like, I would definitely know this?
Well, that's why I gave the episode number to give you a rough idea. It's not about, right. Oh, if you get 100, man, you remember all our episodes. It's just,
right.
Just like a fun way to tell our guests both stuff we talked about and some of the different guests that we had.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I feel like I'm gonna come back with a vengeance here. I'm gonna come back with something more intense and throw it your way.
Oh, okay. I'm down.
And I learned that there are racists everywhere. Berlo, I know that really dampened the mood. That really dampened the mood.
Great way to end a comedy show, Scott.
Yeah. Well, I learned that you should go subscribe to us on all podcast platforms, including iTunes and Stitcher and Laughable and the Discovery County Network and comingrightup.org. I learned that. And before we get out of here, Berlo, anything to promote?
Yeah, I'm going to give a shout-out to our guest from a couple episodes ago, John Horsley. He has made his mark on the Kickstarter, and he's going to move forward with the Ines Anthology. He told us about a great story arc about monsters and how it's trivializing a family, and it's going to be through different times and different animations and items like that. It's really exciting stuff to look forward to, so go to Ines Anthology, that's E-Y-N-E-S anthology.com to keep up on his progress and see when this comic comes out.
Awesome. Yeah, that was a fun interview. Very interesting concept. And I am going to promote April 13th. It stemmed from this podcast, and that is your boy here and some of my friend comedians will be performing in the afternoon at the Wonder Bar in Asbury Park at the Asbury Park Cat Convention. We will be doing comedy at the Cat Convention. I know you guys are jealous, but you should probably come out because – when are you ever going to see me do bits about cats?
Yeah, and we're going to have former guests on the show like Mike Ciccoli and Natty Bumper Car, amongst with other comedians. So check it out, everybody.
Absolutely. Berlo, we keep it rolling here. Another episode, another one of the books. Good times tonight. Guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. And please go check out some of the past episodes. You guys are the best. Goodbye. I played the Supremes.
Ah, I see where you went there.
Yes. I always try to tie one in, and then there's weeks when I don't know what I'm saying, and I'm like,